Okay, let's unpack this. Have you ever scrolled through your fitness app, maybe wondering how it just, boom, pinpoints your highest step count for the whole week? Or watched a spreadsheet somehow magically highlight the single biggest sale in a huge list of numbers?
Yeah, it seems like magic sometimes.
Exactly. But at its core, these everyday things often rely on a, well, surprisingly simple but really powerful technique from computing.
Absolutely, a fundamental building block.
So today we're taking a deep dive into standard algorithms. We're focusing specifically on one of the most foundational ones, find maximum.
A classic.
Yeah. We're pulling insights from some really solid sources here, like the Higher CS Software Design and Development booklet and the King's Park booklet.
Good resources. Yeah, they're designed to build that practical programming
Right.
knowledge.
So our mission today is simple: give you a crystal clear, practical understanding of this essential algorithm. We want you to get not just what it does, but how it works, and maybe most importantly, why it's so critical, even if you're just starting out coding.
Well, what's fascinating, I think, is how certain problems just keep popping up in software development almost universally, across different apps, different languages.
Like common patterns.
Exactly. These recurring solutions, these kind of tried and true recipes for common challenges, that's precisely what we call standard algorithms.
Okay.
One of our sources, the Software Design booklet, puts it nicely. They say algorithms are a collection of instructions issued to the computer to solve particular problems. And they're standard because, well, they're used often and in many different situations.
So they're like tools in a toolbox that programmers reach for all the time.
That's a great way to put it. They're fundamental, reusable building blocks. Whether you're doing something simple, like finding the biggest number for a school task, or something complex.
Like analyzing engine data.
Right. These algorithms are pre-tested, efficient recipes. They save you so much time, stop you from constantly reinventing the wheel, They really are the bedrock of efficient code.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So let's zoom in then on this find maximum. This is where it gets really interesting for me. How does a computer, which, as you said, can only really process one thing at a time?
One instruction, one piece of data.
Right. How does it find the single largest value in a list? Especially if that list is massive. It's not like it can just glance at the whole thing like we can.
No, it can't, and that's key. The sources emphasize this. The processor can only do one thing at a time, and the contents of the array can only be looked at individually.
One by one.
Exactly. So the find maximum algorithm is clever. It works by keeping track of the largest value it has seen so far as it steps through the list. It's very logical, very step by step. Kind of like how you might find the tallest person in a room if you could only compare two people at a time.
Okay, I think I can picture that. How does it start?
It all begins with a really crucial first step, initialization. The algorithm sets a variable, let's call it max, or sometimes you'll see max no in examples.
Right, like in the booklets.
Yeah, it sets that max variable equal to the very first item in the list or array you're looking at.
Okay, so item number one becomes the temporary maximum.
Precisely. That's your starting point, your initial highest value to compare against. It's like pointing to the first person in line and saying, okay, for now, you're the tallest.
Got it.
Then the program uses what's often called a fixed loop. This loop is set up to systematically go through every other item in the array, one by one, starting from the second item.
So you establish that bits line, the first item, and then you methodically check everything else against it. What happens inside that loop then?
So, for each of these subsequent items, the algorithm does a simple compare. It compares the item it's currently looking at to the value stored in our max variable.
This is the core logic, right?
This is the core, yeah, the kind of magic moment. If the item it's currently looking at is larger than the value we have stored in max, then max gets updated. It takes on this new, larger value.
Okay, so it replaces the old maximum.
Right. But if the item isn't larger, then max just stays as it is. It keeps its current value, and the loop just moves on to the next item.
And it just keeps doing that.
Yeah.
Compare, update if needed, move on.
Exactly. This comparing and updating process continues relentlessly until every single item in the list, right up to the very last one, has been examined. Once that loop finishes, the value that's left sitting in the max variable is guaranteed to be the true maximum value from the entire list.
That sounds deceptively simple when you break it down like that. But I bet seeing it in action really helps it click. Can
Yeah.
we walk through a quick example? Maybe using pseudocode logic, like in the King's Park booklet.
Sure, let's do that. Imagine you have a list of numbers, maybe some test scores. 23, 76, 45, 98, 23. How does our computer find the top score?
Okay, let's trace it.
All right, step one.
Step one, initialization. We kick things off, set our max variable. Mm. It gets the first number in the list, which is 23. So right now, max holds 23. That's that crucial first step you mentioned.
Critical. Getting that initialization right is key. I remember guiding students on this. Forgetting to initialize max node correctly is a common early hurdle. You might get zero or just garbage data.
Yeah, I can see that. Okay, so max is 23. Step two, loop and compare. The loop starts. We look at the next number after the first one, which is 76. We ask,
yeah,
is 76 greater than our current max, 23?
Yes, it is.
Yes. So max gets updated. It becomes 76, our new high score.
Yeah.
For now.
Exactly. Now next step.
Step three, continue comparing. Move to the next element, 45. Is 45 greater than our current max? 76.
Uh-huh.
No. So max stays put. It remains 76. 45 didn't beat it.
Good. Keep going.
Step four. Another update. Next element is 98. Is 98 greater than our current max?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Big jump. So max is updated again. Now max holds 98.
Found a new higher score.
Almost there. Step five. Final check. Last element is 23. Is 23 greater than our current max?
Definitely not.
Nope. So max remains 98. And that's the end of the list.
Mm-hmm.
So the loop finishes.
Okay.
And the final value in our max variable is 98, which, looking back at the list, 23, 76, 45, 98, 23, is indeed the highest value.
Perfect.
It's such an elegant process, isn't it? How a computer, which is really just good at these simple comparisons, can solve this problem reliably every time. Like a very diligent clerk just keeping a running tally.
It really is elegant. And, you know, what's important to realize is that this basic structure isn't just for finding the largest number, the fine minimum algorithm. It's virtually identical.
Oh, right. How does that work?
You just flip the comparison. Instead of checking if the current item is greater than max, you check if it's less than your min variable.
Ah, so you initialize min to the first item, loop through the rest, and if you find something smaller, you update min.
Exactly that. The logic of initialization, looping, comparing, and potentially updating remains pretty much the same. It really shows the power and adaptability of these standard algorithm patterns. If you can code find maximum, tweaking it for find minimum is usually trivial.
That's really useful to know.
And if we connect this back to the bigger picture, understanding find maximum isn't just about the numbers themselves, you know. It's actually a perfect lens for grasping some really fundamental software engineering principles. Things that make your code robust, readable, and reusable.
Okay, like what?
Well, one of the first is modularity. Our sources, like the HireCS booklet, really highlight how standard algorithms like find maximum are typically implemented as self-contained units. You might call them subprograms, or more commonly, functions or procedures, depending on the language.
Little blocks of code that do one specific job.
Precisely. They do one specific, well-defined task. And this practice, called modular programming, makes your overall code so much easier to read, to reuse in different places, and especially easier to debug.
Right. If there's a problem finding the max, you know exactly which function to look inside.
Exactly. Instead of digging through thousands of lines of unrelated code, the booklet puts it well. Breaking your program down into subprograms is a good idea because it makes your code modular, readable, and therefore more maintainable. It's like building with Legos instead of sculpting from one giant lump of clay.
That makes a lot of practical sense, especially as programs get bigger and more complex.
Yeah.
Does this modular approach also affect how information, like variables, behaves in the code?
Oh, absolutely. And that leads us straight into the scope of variables. When you write your find maximum algorithm inside one of these functions or subprograms, that max variable we kept talking about is typically what we call a local variable.
Local, meaning?
Meaning it only exists and has meaning inside that specific function where you declared it. Think of it like writing a note on a whiteboard inside a specific meeting room.
Okay.
That note, that variable, it only exists and is visible within that room. It doesn't affect anything happening in the hallway or other rooms.
Ah, I see. So it's contained.
Exactly. It's contained, which is crucial for writing secure and predictable code. It prevents you from accidentally changing that max value from somewhere else in a larger program, causing unexpected bugs.
What's the alternative?
The alternative is a global variable, which can be accessed and changed from anywhere in the program. Using our analogy, that's like writing your note on a giant billboard in the town square.
Oh, dear. Anything could mess with it.
Right. Anyone could see it. Anyone could change it. It could get overwritten, cause confusion. Global variables often lead to messy, hard-to-track bugs. That's why our sources wisely advise that global variables are best avoided whenever possible. Local scope is generally much safer and cleaner.
That meeting room versus town square billboard analogy really clarifies it. Okay, so local variables keep things tidy within their function. But if these functions are self-contained, how do you make your find maximum function flexible? How do you get it to work on different lists of numbers? Like if I have my sales data today, but my temperature readings tomorrow.
Excellent question. That's where parameter passing comes into play. This is the mechanism for getting information into and sometimes out of these modular functions.
Like sending the list to the function.
Exactly. When you define your find maximum function, you set up what are called formal parameters. Think of them as placeholders, like blank spaces on a form waiting to be filled in. Your function definition might look something like find max, list of numbers. Here, list of numbers is the formal parameter. It's a placeholder for whatever list you want to process.
Okay, so it's like a template.
Precisely. Then when you actually use or call that function in your main program, you provide the actual parameters. These are the real concrete values or variables you're plugging into those placeholders.
So I'd write find max my sales data.
Exactly. In that case, my sales data, which holds your actual list of sales figures, is the actual parameter. Or you could call it later with find max temperature readings.
I see. So the function itself is generic and the parameters make it work with specific data each time you call it.
You've got it. This parameter passing mechanism is what enables true reusability and portability for your code. You write the findMax logic once, wrap it in a function with a parameter for the list, and then you can use that same function on any list of numbers you need to analyze anywhere in your program or even in other programs. It makes findMaximum an incredibly versatile tool.
So bringing this all together,
yeah.
What does this mean for you, the learner? Maybe someone just starting out with coding, perhaps working through exercises.
Well, it means that this seemingly simple find maximum algorithm is, yes, a foundational tool for finding the biggest number, but it's also so much more. It's a practical concept used everywhere, and it's a perfect vehicle for learning these bigger, crucial programming principles.
Right. It's not just theory. You see it in action.
Definitely. When you look at data analysis decision making, the applications are endless. Our sources mention very direct uses like finding the name of the pupil with the highest assignment mark or the highest exam mark in a school database.
Yeah, very practical tasks you might actually be given, maybe like in Task 9, Problem 1A from the Software Design Booklet, or Task 1A from Kings Park.
Exactly those kinds of tasks. But think beyond that. Finding peak engine performance in diagnostics, identifying the day's highest temperature for weather systems, figuring out the busiest hour for a website to manage servers.
Wow. Okay. So it really is everywhere.
It is. All these scenarios, at their heart, often rely on this fundamental algorithm. And usually it's implemented, just as we discussed, as a well-designed modular function using local variables for safety and parameters for flexibility.
So when you, the listener, are asked to implement this algorithm, maybe typing up and testing an example or tackling one of those specific booklet tasks,
yeah.
Remember, you're not just finding a number.
Mm-hmm. You're building a piece of software.
Yeah. You're building a reusable, robust piece of software. You're practicing modularity, thinking about variable scope. You're taking a really vital step towards becoming a more capable programmer, someone who can tackle different problems with elegant, efficient solutions.
Well said.
So we've unpacked the find maximum standard algorithm today. It seems simple on the surface, but it really does underpin so much of the software we use every single day.
It's a cornerstone.
Hopefully this deep dive has given you a clearer picture of its core logic, the compare and update cycle, the absolute necessity of getting that initialization right, and how it connects beautifully to bigger ideas like modular programming, variable scope, and passing parameters.
Mm-hmm. Key takeaways.
As you go about your day now, maybe take a moment to consider how many systems you interact with, from your fitness tracker hitting that top step count, maybe a banking app showing the largest transaction. How many quietly rely on this exact algorithm?
It makes you think, doesn't it?
It really does. What other everyday situations could you imagine being simplified or solved using a basic find maximum operation? It just goes to show the elegant simplicity that can hide behind even really complex seeming functions once you start to peel back the layers.